You're going the wrong way. Each across the room.
I have done that. My name is Stephen. I'm an optometrist.
And I'm very happy to be here tonight. Sunday night has a special place in my heart, always will. The meeting started by an alcoholic named Jean Beaubien. Would have been 46 years sober today. And he was a very good man who tried to help me, a hopeless case, many times. He would sit down, have a coffee with me, and try to help me keep things simple. But I'm probably like you've heard other people, other alcoholics stand up before you. I'm one that has a mind like that doesn't want to keep things simple. And the idea of keeping things simple was kind of a threat to who I thought I was and how intelligent and how bright I was. And I found that as I've gone along in life, that simplicity helps me to keep seeing directions where I should go rather than directions I shouldn't go. So my best thinking keeps me insane, and my simple way of trying to do things and follow direction keeps me with a degree of sanity. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my first meeting in 1986. It was Sunday nighters, on another night rather than Sunday, and I wasn't ready yet. I had still drinking when I came into the room, and I was sure I didn't belong there. You know, after all, these people seemed different than me. And at the time, I had red hair, so I really felt different than everybody in the room. And I wasn't ready to let anyone get to know me. And in this room, I've come to know that I couldn't be honest with myself because I didn't know what honesty was. And honesty is something, as I go along in life, I'm finding out what it is. And some days, I can be more honest at different levels than other days. I'm not a saint. I'm a man who's trying to progress and not have to drink in order to progress, not have to go out and use drugs, not have to go out and gamble in order to progress and able to cope with life. Because I've used all these three addictions, gambling, drugs, alcohol, one or three or two or three at a time or three or three at a time, in order to get by in life. I couldn't somehow, as a young boy, there was something inside me that just didn't feel like I fit in. You've heard that in the room, that football in the stomach. And the first time I heard that, I thought, these motherfuckers, all they talk about is this simplicity. I felt this something stressed inside of me, that something happened to me when I was a young boy, a lot of tragedies, you know, different things. But around 13 years old, I had my first drink of alcohol. It was a gin gimlet. I remember it was at a bar mitzvah. At friends, and we snuck it in from the bar, and I remember the effect of warmth inside, that feeling like I was taller, bigger, stronger, more handsome, and able to communicate, that feeling like I was okay. And I tried to get that feeling ever over and over and over again throughout my life. I had a lot of great tragedies, and one of the greatest tragedies I had was what was the greatest tragedy I had? You know, I'm trying to be this. You know, I speak in a lot of different venues, and besides Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had the privilege of having a life that I never thought I would have. If you had asked me 10 years ago, even, that I have a chance at life, I would have told you no. Too hopeless. I've been convicted of a number of crimes in my life. I was just telling somebody about getting my pardon both here in the U.S. and I've been convicted of drug trafficker, you know, bank robber, arms dealing, you know, all kinds of, you know, great things that I've been convicted of. And this is who I was for many years in Alcoholics Anonymous. I was an ex-con trying to get sober. I was a tough guy trying to get, you know, less tough. And I was this and I was that. But I was never Steve. Never was this person real to myself inside my heart. And it took me a lot of struggling, a lot of looking at these 12 steps until finally I took the book and I threw it over there and I said, this doesn't work for me. You know, it doesn't work for me at all. And that didn't lead me anywhere at all. So as I said, I came into an Alcoholics Anonymous 1986, started to get real in 1988, finally started to get sober, was involved in many meetings and trying to help other people to the best of my ability and trying to sponsor people and show them the direction that I was finding in the literature in Alcoholics Anonymous and finding from the hearts of other people and doing what I thought was right to try to help my fellow brother and sister in Alcoholics Anonymous and the world. But inside I felt all was torn apart. All was not like I belonged. That was something I could not deal with. I couldn't get rid of it. I thought I had a spiritual experience, and I did to a large degree. I found what God meant to me, and that was, you know, this good orderly direction that you would hear about in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thought I could go out and talk my way into feeling differently and do the steps until I felt differently and try to help people, and I was really lost. And I was really hard on myself, like a lot of alcoholics are. And I couldn't seem to, you know, move ahead. But when I look back, I was moving ahead. I was doing my best, you know. And I thought to inside myself, I wanted people to love me, but I couldn't love myself. I couldn't feel good about who I was or what I was becoming. And I would sit in these meetings and I would try to fit in, and I felt like I couldn't, like everyone does, right? Like we all do, all separate, you know? And it wasn't until I started to reach out and develop relationships with other people, friendships, you know, I started to feel part of the human race. I didn't believe that Alcoholics Anonymous had a chance of saving me, of saving my life. I thought maybe it could moderate who I was becoming. Maybe that I wouldn't drink as much or gamble as much or use drugs as much. But could it really change who I was at my core? Because I couldn't let anyone sense who that was, because I wasn't sure what that was either. And I was coming to these meetings day after day, week after week, year after year, and I was feeling that sense of alienation. Like I didn't belong here. This is not where I belong. This is not where I should be. I should be a star, a rising star, over there. And I always wanted to be over there, that rising star, all my life, and I couldn't get over there. I couldn't do it. I didn't know what it was. See, I couldn't keep it simple. You know, like Jean Bobien told me, stick with the bums and help them. Go into the alleys and help them and keep it simple. And then I would tell him, see, you got a lot of pride. That's what I'm talking about here, you know. I had a lot of pride. Pride kept me drunk, and pride has kept me sober to a large degree at certain points in my life. I wouldn't want other people to know that I was having urges to get wasted, you know, because it doesn't fit into what the 12 steps is about, what Alcoholics Anonymous is about. You see, I stopped going to meetings, about 2 years ago. I stopped going to them because I couldn't take it anymore. I felt like I was not where I wanted to be, that idea of the rising star, somebody being somebody special. I just couldn't take it. You know, I knew that in my work life that I was finally doing something that I really touched me in my heart, that meant something to me. And I wanted to keep them separate. I couldn't see that where I could be this person who was an alcoholic who was actually out there doing good in the community, trying to help people to the best of my ability. Even though I always carried the 12 steps with me in my heart, in my way of living, in the way I dealt with people, the relationships I had with people, problem is they didn't carry them with them. You know, so I would leave with resentment. You know, and that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is about for me now. It's a community of people, individuals who are human, who have these kinds of resentments and these feelings, these shortcomings, these defects of character, and they carry them with them. They carry these things with them all the time. See, I didn't understand, being the bright individual that I am and consider myself to be, that these were two separate things. I thought that I was this person here and I was that person there. I didn't know that I was all this one person. I don't know if I'm making sense to you. But to me, it's making a great deal of sense. So therefore, you know, in my career, you know, I have to be a certain kind of person, and I couldn't let this other person out. So therefore, I had to kind of stay away. And I can tell you that I know a lot about what it means to be a dry drunk. You hear that expression, dry drunk? Well, I'll tell you what it means. What it means to me is that I'm on like an emotional roller coaster attached to things that are out of my control. Like, I'm powerless over all of what's happening in life, but my emotions are tied into these things. So therefore, I become a dry drunk. I'm kind of attached to the ups and downs, really attached, we all are, to life. And that's where I've been for the last couple of years. Thank God I haven't had to pick up a drink in order to deal with life. But it doesn't mean that I've had times where I've been very unhappy, you know, full of anger and hurt pride and struggling with things, and you know, and I've had some good friendships with people who are alcoholics who have the same kind of struggles, and that's really helped me to realize my own humanity. And the 12 steps have been a discovery of my own humanity for me. They've been a discovery of finding out that little boy who was lost somewhere inside, who was beaten and battered by a family of individuals, my mother, my father especially, abused, and I held that against them for their whole life. A lot of things have changed. My father passed away about a year and a half ago, and I was able to, during the time that he was struggling with his own mortality, to spend time with him, to sit with him as he was dying, and to be able to love him like he loved me, the way I was as a little boy. And he had his own struggles that he carried with him, that he brought to my relationship with me. And I remember the day that he died. He'd been having dialysis for the last couple of years, and I hadn't been going to spend time with him when he was doing this because I found it very difficult. On the day he died, I went down to see him. Something told me I had to go and see him. I went to see him at noon, and I told him what I was going to do for the rest of my life, and then he had some kind of attack, and around 5 o'clock, something pulled me to come back to the hospital, and I went back to the hospital. Within 5 minutes, he died. And it was a great change for my mother, who'd been married to him for 63 years and lived with him and loved him. And it was a great change for me, because my identity had been that I had been abused and beaten and this and that. The fact was, the reality was, my father loved me the best way that he could. I'm all over the place. You can see that I'm not going to give you any standard Alcoholics Anonymous talk, but you can be sure that I'm going to tell you a couple of stories, the kind of alcoholic that I was. I was the kind of alcoholic that it was a desperate case. When I was in my 20s, I can remember walking into a bank at the corner of McGill College and St. Catherine. It used to be the City and District Bank. I was the kind of guy that always carried a piece, a gun. At that time, I was carrying a silver 25 Saturday Night Special. Walked into the bank, jumped over the counter, went to two tellers, and put the gun to the head. They jumped back, boom, 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 and I walked, jumped over, leaped over the fucking counter. I had a ticket for the train to go to Toronto. I walked down McGill College, never looked back. I taught myself, you never fucking look back. I didn't look back because I was too scared to look back. I had my gun. I had a little golf bag, golf shoes, the gun in there, full of money. Walked through Place Pommerie, I got into the train. I had my ticket all well planned. And I sat in the bar car, and they don't open the bar until you get outside the city limits. And I couldn't wait for that bar car to open. And the biggest worry I had, I remember sitting in that bar car, and I was wondering, how am I going to get? I told them, give me a double vodka. As soon as we get outside the city limits there, and I'm trying to wonder, how am I going to get the fucking 20 out of the bag? All the money's in the golf. They see me, and I'm worried about this. The gun might fall out. That was the kind of drunk I was. I went to Toronto, stayed in a place called the Lord Simcoe Hotel, went on a binge, went to Greenwood Racetrack, blew all the money. Then I came back to rob more banks and more fear. I was the kind of guy that give me a few drinks and I was tough as hell, but without the booze in me, and people might have think that I was tough, but I was scared. And all these activities, all they ever got me was, months and years locked up. That was the story of my life. My last bank robbery is the one with the water pistol. I was living in Ville Saint-Laurent at the time, and there was a bank, CIBC. I remember the bank was on DeCary Boulevard in Ville Saint-Laurent. And I had no guns by this time. I had sold all my guns because I needed the money for booze and gambling and drugs. I went into my parents' basement and I found a little water pistol. And the only trouble is that the water pistol, I had to take the shoe polish and polish the water pistol and walked into the bank with the water pistol. And at that time I had gained a lot of weight, had a t-shirt and my big fat stomach out of the air, and I got up to the bank and I realized I haven't got a bag to put the money in. Holy fuck. So outside was a garbage can. I went in there with a clear plastic bag, pulled it out of the garbage can, walked into the bank, and holy shit, they put up glass since the last time I was there. Oh my God. I put my water pistol against the window and it didn't hold up, and they give me the money. I walk out of the bank with the money in a clear plastic bag, trying to stuff it up my t-shirt like this, pulling it down, and I forgot that I didn't have a getaway because I didn't know if I was going to get away. But now I had all this money, so I remembered it was a taxi stand down the street near Cofrechou. So I went down the lane, got in the taxi, and we went along Cofrechou. I was going to go to the train station along there, Valrhona. Got caught in traffic, holy shit. I can hear the sirens coming closer and closer, and I don't look back. I don't want to see the cops come. They're driving up on the sidewalk all over the place, and then they pull me out. They pulled me out of the car and I'm under arrest again. They throw me on the ground. I remember lying on the side of the road. And that was the story of my life, and there's many other stories. Always was the same ending. And I couldn't change. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and used to be a guy named Sally Ann Mike that would be around here downtown. And I remember one of Sean's friends, they would come to 12 Stepney. I would be in the emergency at St. Mary's. I'll give you an example. And I would be strapped down, David, but always put me in restraint anytime I went to an emergency because I had a terrible record. And I guess I had quite a mouth like a lot of alcoholics had. So I was probably more mouthy than dangerous, but they took me as being dangerous. So in those days, the two alcoholics come down with me to 12 Stepney. I'm strapped down in the bloody restraints. And just to give you an example, and I reek of booze, and I don't remember really what happened the day before, but I must have threatened to take my life or probably tried to, who the hell remembers. But these guys started telling me, Steve, are you powerless? I said, I'm not fucking powerless. I'm pushing against the street. You're not powerless. Look at you. And I said, I'm not powerless. Go fuck yourself. And these guys had come all the way down there to 12 Stepney. Good alcoholics that they were. Good recovering alcoholics that they still are. But I wasn't ready. Who was going to tell me that I'm powerless? The idea of being powerless? The whole concept of being powerless is foreign to my imagination, never mind my reality. Of being powerless over something like a glass of alcohol? That doesn't make sense. I should be able to just say, like other people told me all my life, just put it aside. Real man, just put it aside and move on. But I have to admit defeat, that I'm powerless over something like that. Oh, that was hard for me to admit. It took me years still to accept, never mind, admit I could admit anything, but to accept it at a depth that could really change who I am. That depth can spark something that's going to help me to change, and that's I've got to find God. Holy shit, they come into the room, they tell me I've got to find God on top of drinking, not drinking. Holy shit, that's crazy. These people are out to lunch. They got to be out to lunch. you know what? Most days I find God. I find God not only within myself, I find God within each person that I meet. When I'm right with me, I know God is within each one, every person that I meet every day. Each contact I have, each dealing with all kinds of situations, I know God's within them when I'm right with me. But when I'm not right with me, they're all motherfuckers. They're all out to get me. That's sober. So do you mean to be able to tolerate that kind of discomfort takes a lot of this idea of community, the idea of being in a community of Alcoholics Anonymous, the idea of relying upon other people's concept of what I might consider to be realities. That's what the community of Alcoholics Anonymous is about. That's where the real change happens in my behavior, in my tolerance of myself. See, all these words are fine and beautiful, but put them to practice is a real big, big leap. I put them to practice a lot, coming to meetings day after day, sitting in the rooms, tolerating the people in the rooms. But to go out there in society and actually work in society and put them into practice and put up with other people's shortcomings is difficult. Until I realize that it's putting up with my own defects and shortcomings that is really the problem. Because actually I'm powerless over other people, completely. And that's the whole idea of being powerless over alcohol is okay, I can live with that, but being powerless over people, that's taking a long time for me to really integrate into who I am. And it's something that I have to work on all the time. Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a choice in life that I never had before. It gave me the choice to destroy myself and affect the many people that love me around me, or to be able to walk into difficult situations and try to go with them, to change with them. To not always trying to control the outcome of everything, trying to be the person that God wants me to be. And then I could let other people be the person that God wants them to be. I don't have to do or say or try to change them the way I want them. These are all great concepts if you're living, you know, in a small room or a small house somewhere, but I gotta get out there and live in the world. And I'm proud of myself. And this is that I've been able to take what I've learned from Alcoholics Anonymous and go out into the world and carry it with me and be an example of what these 12 steps have done for me. I have been able to do that the last number of years, and I didn't think that was beyond my imagination, beyond belief. And what I do now is, now I'm not that convicted this or ex that or ex this. Now I go out and I do good for other people. I've been given the gift of sanity, and God has given me the direction to be able to go out and make relationships with people where we can raise money to help people to change their lives, to really impact how people live and what they can do with themselves. My life of desperation and hopelessness has given me a world where I am appreciated and loved, not only by people that I've met in AA, by many, many people that I've met all over the place. And you know, to feel love from other people is something that I didn't think that I was capable of feeling. I didn't think it was possible. And I owe it all to AA and the people that come here that keep the rooms open for hopeless fucking cases like me. This is the only place I can swear like this. Other venues I can't swear like this or they kick me off. First time I remember they asked me to speak at an AA meeting, I think it was Sean that asked me, and it's a long time ago, And he said to me, get up there. It was a Sunday nighters. And I said, I got up there and I was scared. I said, oh, fuck this. And I walked off, you know. And they said, come on back up there. And they hauled me back. Him and Sandy, he probably doesn't remember. Him and Sandy hauled me back up. Get back up there. And I said to the people, why don't you all go fuck yourself? And I went on. I started like that. And I felt at home because here is a place that I could say how I felt, and it didn't faze the people. Half of them were, you know, in those days we had it. Some of them had jugs in their pocket, you know. That's not that long ago, 20 years ago. You see, Jean Beaubien, this man had the patience to talk to me. He had the patience to listen to me. And that is a miracle. See, the miracle is not me. The miracle is the people that come before me. The people that have held the doors open before me, they are the miracle. The miracle is the 12 concepts and the 12 steps, the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you look at them any time, and you can argue about them night and day, they are God's gift to the alcoholic who still suffers. To keep the community of Alcoholics Anonymous together as one. And for me, I see that it's 26 minutes and 26 seconds long enough, and I thank you for allowing me to speak to you tonight. Thanks.